Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Mike Eckel, senior correspondent here in Prague, filling in for our regular host, Steve Gutterman. This weekend again saw massive protests in Minsk. At least 100,000 people jammed the center of the Belarusian capital on August 23rd, a clear indication that opponents of Belarus's strongman, President Alexander Lukashenko, have not given up. In the days prior, however, it seemed for a time that Lukashenko might have gained the upper hand. Not only was he refusing to budge on his holding a new election, he took to the state-controlled airwaves, state TV, with defiant speeches. At one meeting with factory workers, he said, "If you want new elections, you'll have to kill me first." Now, of course, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, determining factors for Lukashenko's future is Russia. Lukashenko has long been a thorn in the side of the Kremlin. They would love to have someone more pliable in Minsk, someone who would roll over and, say, allow the creation of the Union State, for example. That's something that Lukashenko has resisted mightily, mainly because it would all but mean the loss of Belarus's sovereignty and maybe its independence eventually. Moscow also, of course, fears a repeat of what happened in Ukraine in 2014. That's when months of anti-government protests culminated in violent clashes and the ouster of the pro-Russian president there. So, the question is, what does Russia want? Joining me on the phone to разбираться с этим вопросом, to have a go at this question, is Ирина Лагунина, a sharp-eyed, longtime correspondent with RFERL's Russian service and director of special projects. Ира, добрый пожаловать. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
So, what does Moscow want? The Kremlin certainly doesn't want Belarus joining the European Union or NATO, that's for sure. Can it tolerate Lukashenko staying on? Could Moscow engineer a palace coup or get someone more pliable in there? What do we know about Moscow's intentions and its goals and its policies at this point in time?
You know, Mike, there was an interesting evolution in Moscow's attitude towards the protests from the very beginning, from the 9th of August. First, didn't estimate properly the scale of the protest or underestimated the people's desire for freedom and something more democratic than what they have. Because at the beginning, it looked like Moscow was not supporting Lukashenko at all, because all Russian state media kind of portrayed Lukashenko's action as pretty unwise or sometimes even dumb. And at the same time, especially the pro-Kremlin Telegram channels ridiculed and downplayed Svetlana Tikhanovskaya as the housewife who didn't have any political experience, who doesn't act like a leader, which is all true, but Svetlana Tikhanovskaya also said herself that she was not a leader, but she was a symbol. And this symbol right now looks like became stronger than, the security forces of Lukashenko gathering tens of thousands of people on daily protests in all over the country. So then at some point when Kremlin saw that the protests really grew to something more substantial, and that the protest actually now unites both workers, intellectuals, actors, journalists, practically all segments of Belarusian society, Kremlin changed its tone, and in one day, just really in one day, in one hour, all state TV channels turned into supporting Lukashenko and portraying the protest as the threat to Belarusian sovereignty and Belarusian stability. The term that Putin likes so much from the very beginning, the term that he based his career and his popularity in Russia on at the very beginning. So it's really interesting how Kremlin now sees protests as a possible threat to status quo that existed for so many years in Russian-Belarus relationship, even though they were bumpy, but they were bumpy only on the level of the presidents, you know, kind of showing that two authoritarian leaders or two authoritarian regimes cannot be true allies. They can be allies only when they really need to support each other and when this relationship do not interfere into you know, domestic grip on power of each of the leaders. Right.
Now, of course, Putin and Lukashenko have talked on the phone several times, at least four by my count, since the August 9th election, where Lukashenko was declared the winner and the opposition was rejected. So it goes without saying there's lots of behind-the-scenes conversations going on. There was also an interesting development last week involving Belarusian state TV. Journalists have been walking off the job there in protest, and apparently Russian journalists, reporters, producers, maybe even cameramen, have started to be flown in from Moscow and elsewhere to take the Belarusians' place in broadcasting state news. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there's been a noticeable change in tone in Belarusian TV on how they've been reporting events. What do we know about this, and what is that? What do you make of all that?
You know, there was a lot of jokes about this in Russian social media because what happened was that this move to replace mostly technical staff in Belarus TV by Russian state media technicians was kind of portrayed as proof that there is no real difference between the state propaganda in Belarus and the state propaganda in Russia, which is not really true because you know, this is mostly technical stuff. Having said that, of course, the Russian state media is much more elaborate in propaganda. It's richer. It got tremendous money from state all these years. It's very professional, if you can say such a word about propaganda, but I guess you can.
Yes.
And, of course, in present circumstances in Belarus, you need something more than, you know, blunt lie. That was sometimes part of state TV coverage. So apparently, Russia will try to help, and it's not only on TV, by the way. It's also going on in Telegram channels, and Telegram plays a vital role right now in Belarus in terms of coverage of the protests. You can see right now that there is, for example, a pro Lukashenko Telegram channel which is called First Pool. Yes. And Russia today is forwarding those messages or just taking videos, for example, and putting on their Telegram channel. So there is an interaction not only on TV, but also in social media, which Kremlin knows how to manipulate, unlike Lukashenko, whose reaction was to shut down the internet rather than trying to use it. As a result, he shut it down his own website, for example.
Right.
So it's an interesting development right now.
As I mentioned earlier, Ukraine, the ghosts of Maidan are hanging over these events in Belarus in many ways. Maidan, of course, were the it's the shorthand term for the protests that culminated in in February 2014 with the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. And that event was really, I think, a seismic shift for the post-Soviet space. As everyone recalls, Yanukovych's ouster resulted in Moscow annexing the Crimea Peninsula and stoking a war in the eastern Donbass. And the war, of course, is still ongoing. You know, the term color revolution is often used in Moscow and other capitals to describe events that have resulted, popular uprising, popular protests that have resulted in the ouster of governments. Of course, Ukraine in 2004, Georgia, Kyrgyzstan, even Armenia is sometimes classified as a color revolution. The Belarusian scenario that we're seeing today, is there anything we can observe in the Kremlin's reaction that is a reflection of the lessons Moscow learned in Ukraine in 2014?
Well, I have to say, Mike, that this scenario for Belarus was a concern for Kremlin since 2014, since the annexation of Crimea. And Kremlin actually never tried to hide this concern because if you look, for example, at the military exercise that two countries are staging twice a year, I mean Belarus and Russia, then starting from I think 2015, when there was the military exercise called Slavic Unity, and it's also regular exercises that unite Russian, Belarusian, and Serbian military. So even at that stage, even 5 years ago, one of the scenarios that military of the three countries so-called worked on was the fight with the scenario of Maidan. The official document stated that it's fighting against the not even scenario, but the preparation of the scenario of Maidan, which I think says it all about the mindset of both Kremlin, Putin, Lukashenko, and the military of two countries. Then a year later, there was an exercise when also military exercise. The territory of Belarus and try to seize the main state and military objects in the country. So this scenario is a concern from the very beginning for both regimes, and that's exactly what both regimes are afraid of. For Lukashenko, it's a threat of being overthrown. For Russia, it's a threat that Belarus would turn into a more Western-oriented state, of course. And, you know, once again, from 2014, Russia was adding military units to its Western border because it's not related to Belarus that much and to the situation in Belarus. 2014 was a Maidan, was a turning point for Russia when West was declared a real enemy to Kremlin. And that's why NATO is now the main military adversary of Russia. So that's why Russia was pulling up, adding additional units to its western border. So all this Maidan is, or colored revolution is, a threat to any authoritarian state, to any dictatorship. So it's not surprising that something like this is always a concern for regimes like Putin's regime or Lukashenko's regime. Having said that, I have to stress that from the beginning and up until now, the coordination Council of Belarus protests always declared that Belarus would prefer to be a neutral state with a good relationship with all the countries, both with Russia and with the West. So there are no European Union flags during the protests, for example. We hardly saw any in Belarus. So it's not a colored revolution as it was in Ukraine, when Ukraine really wanted to be Western-oriented. It's more a revolution or a protest against the dictatorship within Belarus right now.
I think we'll see in the next couple of days. Next couple of days will be critical in terms of whether, in determining whether the opposition has momentum or whether Lukashenko is really just not going to back down at all. And so this coming week will be very, very interesting. And thank you for your insights and your analysis, Ira. Spasibo ogromnoye, as always.
Thank you.
That's it for us, folks. This is RFERL's Week Ahead in Russia podcast. Thank you all for joining in.